Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Stat Pack. Joining me today, I'm going to have two guests. First up is David Zavok from Fear the Sword. David, how's it going?
Doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So later on in the show, Whitney Medworth, she's the assistant NBA editor at SB Nation, and a Pacers fan, will be joining the show to give us the insight on the Pacers and how they're going to approach the series. But David, the Cavs, for me, in the series, I think this series more so than how these two teams match up or what the Pacers can really do to push the Cavs. We're certainly going to get into that. I think this series is about how the Cavs show up. How much effort are they putting in? Are there actually struggles? Are there actually like legit concerns with this team now as we go forward? What's your read on this series?
Well, I mean, they have players. I don't think... it's hard to see them as a threat, the Pacers as a real threat to win the series, but, they have, even Monte Ellis, who, it's not very often that he's sort of this big factor in them, on his team going on runs, that sort of thing, but he can create some offense. They obviously have Paul George. CJ Miles was a guy when the Cavs played the Pacers a couple, sort of a week ago or so, and it went to overtime, and they inexplicably had CJ Miles on the bench for a lot of the overtime periods. Just like, why? Because they have ways that they can manufacture offense. It'll be interesting to see what Miles Turner can do. But I think one of the most interesting things is just, everybody's talked about it, but we just haven't seen full strength Cavs very often this year. Amount of time that the Cavs have had the big three and Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver all healthy at the same time, has just really been minimal. And those are probably their, top five or six players right there. So when you're missing those guys for an extended period of time, you're not getting that continuity. The Cavs will get some days off. They will be able to, implement things that apparently they've been holding off on. How good are the Cavs? Because I don't think anybody really knows.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have an idea of how good they actually can be, right? Like we see the outline of how good the offense can be. The defense, of course, has been putrid, but I think some of that has to be just a general apathy for the regular season. Like I talked about this with Chris Barnwell yesterday, but there was this quote, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but Korver, who has been on the team for not really that long, who wasn't part of the title run last year, who's a guy who openly has said like he wants to taste that sort of postseason success he did in Atlanta, to like pass the workhorse they got 2 years ago. He was like, yeah, we want to be done with the regular season. Like, they know what the real season for them is. And I think that's just sort of an interesting case study. Like, we get this every so often. I think, like, people have mentioned the Lakers during the Kobe and Shaq years, I think, was one of those teams. And you've had other teams sort of coast to there. But the Cavs just, like, didn't seem to care, like, a lot of time, right? Like, Richard Jefferson's on the Road Tripping podcast talking about how, like, he doesn't, like, care. Like, he said LeBron James and seen him go 100% since the finals last year. And some of that, of course, I think, like, it's a little bit of blowing smoke. Like, I'm sure there have been moments this year where LeBron has gone, like, 100%, but maybe it's not for a whole game. Maybe it's not for a whole quarter. Maybe it's just for brief moments. I'm kind of very intrigued to just kind of see, like, if there is this general immediate go into playoff mode, or if it's going to take a bad half or a quarter or something like that for them to be like, okay, now we're in the playoffs. Now, you know, our season is on the line every single night. Every game has, like, a straight-up value attached to it. Are they going to just change things that first game out at home against the Pacers, who are coming in with a guy in Paul George who has been incredible for about the last month and a half?
Well, yeah, I mean, just openly, you know, rested Kyrie and LeBron the last two games that, you know, if they win, they are the first seed. You know, I mean, it's like they weren't hiding in any way sort of how they felt about the importance of the one seed. I think the biggest issue is that now they got to play the Raptors in round two, and the Raptors are, like, not a bad team at all. So
no, I mean, they're probably functionally the hardest test for the Cavs in the East, I would think, if they're fully healthy.
Yeah, just in terms of, like, having multiple, you know, people that can score baskets and, you know, a rim protector, and they're a team that can rebound. You know, I mean, they do things that, you know, sort of matter in the playoffs. They have a couple different guys, PJ Tucker and Damari Carroll, that, you know, do I think those guys can guard LeBron? No, but they're bodies that they can throw at him. So, you know, I think it's interesting. You know, the Cavs have, you know, people talked about the Warriors ruining, you know, the regular season of the NBA and just sort of making the finals the only thing functional. If the Cavs are able to sort of walk through the East, and I don't really think that they will, you know, what does that mean for the regular season moving forward? I mean, the Cavs have worked pretty hard to make a mockery of the, you know, whole experience. So, now it's possible that, you know, it takes the Cavs five or maybe even six games to move on from the Pacers, and then, you know, six or seven games with the Raptors, and, maybe some of their, you know, attitude was misplaced and a sign of deeper problems. Not to go all sources, but I know that there were people very, you know, within the organization that are with the team, you know, constantly, that were worried about this team as recently as, you know, 8 or 9 days ago. And so, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about this season is, you know, you kind of mentioned how Kyle Korver going on that sort of rant about just being ready for the regular season to be over in the playoffs. This isn't a team that sniped at each other very much over the course of the year. But I do think towards the end of the year, they, you know, maybe, you know, some of the on-court mistakes started to gnaw at the players a little bit. I mean, everybody points to the Tristan Thompson, LeBron James sort of blow up. I don't necessarily think that that's really a sign of really trouble, but David Griffin alluded to it too yesterday or whenever, talking about the importance of Dante Jones and how he maybe didn't think that the team needed Dante Jones in the locker room, but apparently they did. So
that to me was really interesting. Like I think, like, it's an interesting discussion because, like, I think clearly Liggins isn't exactly, like, a great player by any stretch of the imagination. You know, he wasn't playing very much. But, like, if you're talking about a guy who's, like, actually has, like, a defined set of skills as an NBA player, like, in terms of on the court stuff, he's a better player than Dante Jones. Like, Dante Jones, of course, had that play in the finals last year and stuff, but I mean, even at covering the game the other night and watching Dante Jones on the sidelines, this was a guy who looked very, like, Griffin talked about how he made everyone more vocal within an hour of him being on the ground in Cleveland. He's walking around in the huddles on the sidelines, like, going up to LeBron, getting LeBron talking and energetic and things, walking around with his arms behind his back like he's this sort of, like, you know, badass drill sergeant, kind of getting people riled up. And, like, I think he has that value. Like, before the Cavs even signed him, coincidentally, on the last day of the season last year, like they did this year, the only time people, I think a lot of Cavs fans, like, knew about him was that clip where he bumped into Draymond Green, and Green just stared at him. And that's, like, Dante Jones, like, James Jones is a great leader. LeBron James is a leader in the locker room. RJ and Channing bring a levity to the locker room that I think it needed. And I think, like, it is a healthier locker room than it's been in years past. But maybe they need, like, that kick from Dante Jones. Like, maybe they need that sort of grumpy, sort of unruly fire kind of starter that can call people out on stuff in a way that Lou certainly has in the past, that James Jones certainly can, and I think it's been reported that he has this year. But, I mean, maybe that's, like, weird that you need two, three of those guys in the locker room, but I think it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's basically... you know, and I don't, you're always worried about, like, the way people will take this, but, like, Kyrie and LeBron are probably as close right now, or at least at parts of this year have been closer than they have been before. But, like, they're not, like, friends. Like, they don't, like, hang out. And so you've got sort of, like, two different centers of gravity where, you know, LeBron, you know, is going to be a little bit closer to JR and Tristan, and Kyrie's going to be a little bit closer to Shump. And there's guys that sort of, you know, go between. Kyrie gets along with JR really well. Kyrie gets along with Kevin really well. Kevin gets along with James Jones, who gets along with LeBron. So, like, it's almost like it's not that these guys don't get along. It's that they have very different personalities, and having guys like James Jones and Channing and Dante, I think you explained it pretty well. They sort of can bridge these guys, you know, these divides aren't really even the right word, but they can balance the personalities in different ways. So, you know, James Jones is there for Kevin if he's having a bad game. Channing and RJ are there for Kevin to just keep him having a good time in general. Dante Jones is sort of, from my understanding, you know, I think has been good for Kyrie in terms of you know, issues of accountability and that sort of thing. But he's also willing to talk to LeBron as well. So it's just, you know, and people on Twitter were kind of saying yesterday, like, how is this necessary? Like, why should a team this old need yet another veteran? And to a certain extent, I just think that's very fair, and I don't have any other answer other than it worked really well last year. so like
no, like 100%. Like it's weird to, like, think about this and some of the stuff that we've seen happen, but, like, we've Dave McMenamin is, like, reported the Channing Frye, like, was the guy who, and it's in the book that him and Wendy wrote about, like, how Channing Frye, like, group texted everybody and, like, got them to, like, hang out with each other. Like, Dante Jones was, like, able to, like, call people out on stuff, and we've seen him do that. And, like, Ty Lue, like, one of the subtexts of that book that I find incredibly fascinating was, like, that, like, even LeBron's first year back, Lue was sort of the guy that was able to call LeBron out on stuff, and then when he needed to do it, and he felt he needed to do it, and he needed to go there, he's able to do that. And, like, I think you need some of that pushback against your stars. Like, I of course you want your LeBron to trust in the guys, and you want LeBron to trust in the locker room. You sort of need to, but, like, I think you need to get to a point with him and with Kyrie, and that, because, like, Kyrie can be a little bit hard-headed, and with Kevin, because we've seen Kevin go into his shell at times. You need a guys who can push back on those tendencies.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, I just think we don't really know, you know, what we're going to see. I mean, these guys, you know, particularly when things are going well, I mean, this is, like, not rocket science, but again, it's not like these guys don't get along. We've, you know, they've all experienced, you know, some extremely high highs together. And they all want to get back to that point. I thought one of the things that was happening at the end of the year was, you know, there would be times where Kyrie thought it was time to get serious. And so he'd put, forth a bunch of effort, on both ends, and maybe LeBron would miss a layup and not get back on defense. Or the exact opposite would happen, where Kyrie or LeBron would sort of look like he was ready to get going and get serious about a game, maybe in the third quarter or something. And all of a sudden Kyrie would play a little too much one-on-one and then not get back on defense. So like they were just like off center in terms of like being on the same page on when to really push and go. And you know, obviously you get to the playoffs and that theoretically shouldn't be an issue. But the question then is, does that speak to something else? And again, I just don't think there's any real way to know or guess.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Looking at the basket, like the actual functional basketball side of this, what about Indiana to you screams they could push the Cavs? Because I think there's a couple things in particular that I'm very interested to see how they play out. But I don't know if I think like sort of five or six things for the Pacers have to break in their favor for them to make this a series, or for them to, you know, in the most extreme circumstance, actually pull off the upset.
I think if Paul George is a 40% three-point shooter, if CJ Miles is a 40% three-point shooter, if Jeff Teague and Monte Ellis, are I think if they're shooting as a team 38%, 39%, 40% from three, and getting a lot of them off, I think that presents a lot of problems. I think if Tristan Thompson is, subjected to hack a Tristan or something like that, and because of his thumb or because of simply the fact that he doesn't make free throws, there are issues there. What do the Cavs have behind him? Kevin Love has not really been good in a week and a half, I thought. In those two Hawks games, he was, he particularly struggled offensively. J.R. Smith has not been a consistent shooter at any point in the season. If there's a confluence of events, we've seen Kyrie, put together poor stretches, not so much this season in terms of his shooting. I think that's maybe one of the more underrated things about Kyrie this year, is that, in the past he's had, a couple months where, he was shooting 33%, 34% from three. And if he wasn't scoring, efficiently, he was not helping you, because I think we've seen he doesn't stop shooting when he's struggling. But I think he's been able to sort of lessen the impact on the team when he's struggling. But you never know. So, I think there are – it would take, basically all or most of those things to happen all at once for this to really be an interesting series. So, the Pacers could have a few of those things happen and maybe win a game or two, but they would need any number of them to happen in order to really put a fear into the Cavs.
Yeah, I think for me it starts with Paul George. I think like he's someone who, he's fantastic. He's been great again. And if you look at his numbers in April and March, he's been incredible. And he's going to have to do more and more of that, I think, for Indiana. For Indiana to make it competitive, he has to have games where he outplays LeBron, or at least plays even with LeBron. And I'm very intrigued to see how LeBron rises back to that, right? Like, if Paul George in game one comes out and is, hitting a bunch of threes and stuff, does LeBron immediately just kind of take the game into his control and try to end it early and make a statement? I mean, we saw him, like, the last time the Cavs looked really good, the game to me that I thought was the most telling at the end of the regular season in some ways, the Boston game, like, LeBron just kind of decided, I'm going to stamp them out in the second quarter when Isaiah's out, and that's what happened. Will he do that here? I mean, I think you're going to have to, you'll see some interesting things with Miles Turner pushing Tristan. We'll see how healthy Tristan is. I mean, he didn't play the whole game in the season finale, but I thought he looked very, very fresh in the first half. I thought it was a good sign. And we'll see. And I think the Jeff Teague thing's interesting, because he's coming in on an ankle injury, and he's not exactly had good series against the Cavs the last 2 years, when the Hawks have won a whopping total of zero games against the Cavs in the playoffs. So We'll see how that goes. I kind of fall in the same place as you, though. I think this could go five. That's going to be my pick, and we'll get your pick here in a little bit. But I think Indiana is talented. I think they're going to maybe awaken the Cavs, sort of like the Pistons did last year. I just can't imagine this is actually a seven-game barn burner of a series.
No, I mean, I'm looking at four or five as the most likely options. You know, if I had to guess, I mean, my pick will be, I guess, Pacers or Cavs in five. I think the Pacers will win a game. I don't know what game it'll be. It wouldn't 100% surprise me if it was one of the games in Cleveland, games one or two. But, you know, betting against the Cavs when they're down has not been a good play, at least when it matters over the last couple of years. So, you know, I think they'll be motivated and interested. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the Cavs take it. If they get punched in the mouth when they don't have sort of a built-in excuse that, you know, the regular season doesn't matter or they're waiting for the playoffs. So either way, you know, they're either going to, you know, do it or they're not. So we finally get to find out here pretty soon.
Which I'm pretty excited about. Like, I'm sort of glad we're going to get that type of resolution. Like, I just sort of felt like for the past, I don't know, like a month and a half, like it's been just sort of hard to be very like concerned or very frustrated or very kind of reading into like anything that's happening, right? Like I sort of think like it's been hard to do that, and I'm excited to actually like I'd be able to attach, I think, like a more fixed rate, like more decisions and more like and just takes on things. Like, I'm excited to sort of actually be able to feel like what I'm looking at actually is going to have some value in when, how we're actually evaluating the Cavs. Because I just feel like some of the games we've seen, it's just like, what is this actually going to affect my opinion of the team? And I think those games, like, if the Cavs, like, lose in the second round or something like that, those games take on more of a value. But right now, it's just like, does it actually matter that they lost these games to the Hawks? Like, I just don't think it does, which, kind of going looping this back to the beginning, like, that says a lot about how the Cavs viewed the regular season, if that ends up sort of holding true.
Well, and you know, it kind of goes back to what the exchange I had with Zach Lowe the other day, where, you know, people get mad at like 538
That's a casual name drop. There, Zafok.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, it's relevant. It's relevant. People get mad at 538 for saying the Cavs aren't going to win the title or have low chances. If the Cavs play like they have in the regular season, which is what 538 is measuring, then it's very unlikely that the Cavs will win the title. And that's all that 538 is saying. Like I said, you know, if you're a member of the Cavs analytics staff, it's not very easy for you to evaluate the Cavs, right? I mean, because exactly what we're talking about, in terms of how important is this, like what's worth measuring. And Zach basically says, yeah, they should basically just spend all day watching or playing NBA Jam because, it's very difficult to know what matters and what doesn't. But they're out of excuses, and here we go.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. They are sort of out of excuses. If it goes bad, like they just have to kind of accept the fact that something was actually wrong with this team. It's just hard to see that being the case. Like it wouldn't shock me if like they ended up in the finals again and they lose like two games on the way there. Like that's sort of possible. Let's talk about two more things here. Paul George, he was the catalyst to LeBron, Tristan, and Dustin. How would you go about defending him in this series?
How would I defend Paul George?
Well, I mean, like, if you're Tyronn Lue, how are you arranging your defense, or like the Cavs' defense around defending Paul George? Like, are you like shifting guys on him? Are you just letting LeBron do it? How do you approach defending Paul George?
I think, I think. One of the things that happened was, you know, that's literally what started the Tristan and LeBron thing, you know, a week ago, was they were sort of switched up on how they were defending Paul George. I think that if it's Tristan and a pick and roll situation with George. I think you switched that. And outside of that, I think you want LeBron sort of fighting through it and trying to stay with him. Because we saw, if you remember what Paul George did in the playoffs last year, he's been a big game player in the past. So, I'd put LeBron on him. I would, put Tristan on him. I don't think that you can really get away with, switching guys like JR or Kyrie onto him. I just think you'd get punished. Same with Kevin Love. So, I'm not really even that comfortable turning him into, a pure jump shooter. If you can get him into the mid range, that's fine. But, I don't really want him, getting a lot of confidence from 3-point range either. He hasn't been like a true superstar this year. But I just don't really feel like betting against him. So, I think you're trying to, make Miles Turner beat you with mid-range jump shots. I think you're trying, to run guys like Teague and CJ Miles off the 3-point line. So, if you are sort of letting Monte Ellis dribble, if you are denying 3-point attempts, I think you are in better shape than letting guys, I guess what I'm saying is I don't want to go under screens on Paul George, which, is kind of crazy because the Cavs don't have a ton of rim protection either. But, you start going under screens and Paul George starts hitting threes, starts feeling good about himself. And I think that could be problematic.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think you will see some Richard Jefferson on him just in the lineup. So if it's a bench lineup versus a Paul George lineup, because I think you will use LeBron against other guys and maybe let LeBron roam and protect the rim a little bit in those lineups, especially if they go back to that small LeBron at the five lineup that we saw a little bit. That I think it's something they were maybe trying to see how it worked. That's something I do think we'll see. Last thing before we get your official series prediction. What do you think the Cavs' rotation? Who do you think it includes, I guess? Because I think we've seen it kind of get really big. We've seen it kind of shrink back down. I do actually think there's a chance, and if things get bad defensively, that they may just try Walter Tavares. But I don't think he'll actually be like a functional part of the rotation. Who do you think actually is going to be the guys that Lou goes to, at least for game one at the start of the playoffs?
I would not count on too much Tavares.
I wouldn't either. I just think they may just be like, okay, we need someone huge in there for like a moment. If Turner or someone else, like, or Serafin or Thompson gets in foul trouble or something like that, like, I do think there's a chance they will just try and just see what happens. Even if it's for like 2 minutes and he picks up three fouls like he kind of almost did the other night, even though he ended up playing pretty well.
Yeah, it's possible. I think if there's sort of an interesting guy to watch, it's, you just mentioned Richard Jefferson, maybe spending some time on Paul George. I definitely think that will happen. But, what kind of utility can you get out of Iman Shumpert? Because if he can do that and play physical on Paul George and some of those lineups, I think that's really helpful as well. And, you're going to be asking LeBron to play 42, minutes a game. Being able to steal him some minutes, hiding defensively or maybe helping out defending the rim could be pretty helpful and important.
Yeah, I think Shumpert's definitely – these are the guys I would expect to get to actual minutes, like functional non-garbage time or anything like that minute. So obviously the normal starters, Kyrie Irving, J.R. Smith, LeBron James, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, I definitely think you will see R.J., I think you will see Deron Williams. I think you'll see Shumpert, and I think you will see Channing Frye. I think they're probably going to start off going nine deep. I think if you did, I'm very intrigued to see. Oh, and Korver. So, I mean, I guess sort of 10. I can't believe I forgot Kyle Korver. I'm very intrigued to see who they would cut first if they decide they need to condense things just by wanting to get their best guys playing the most. I'm very intrigued to see who Lou's cuts would be, because I think you. I think it's Channing, and I think the next guy would have to be Shumpert. I think if you're looking at who actually is going to provide the most value, I think it would have to be Shumpert. But
if things are going poorly, I think the guy who gets cut is potentially Darren Williams, because then you're asking LeBron to play more point guard. But I think if Ty Lue is comfortable, it would be Channing Frye, and then, you know, Williams would continue to play. That would be my guess.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting that even though there have been changes, there have been a bunch of different, I mean, the guys that have come in that are different parts of the rotation, Darren, Korver, those guys. Like, it's sort of interesting that, like, at the end of the day, like, aside from Korver potentially, I think, playing late, I think it's sort of interesting that, like, we are at sort of the same point as the rotation in Game 7 last year. Like, we have functionally, like, the same guys playing for the Cavs.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's hard to say exactly, you know, what you're going to get out of some of these guys, but it's at least worth thinking about the fact that, you know, these players are really good. So, yeah, like, Kyle Korver, you know, is the Cavs' fifth or sixth best player, and that's not a bad place to be.
No, that's not a bad place to be at all. David, before we let you get out of here, let's get your series prediction. How do you see this series between the Cavs and the Pacers? Starts on Saturday, 3 o'clock tip-off at the Q, the same time as an Indians game, so another busy Saturday in the land. What's your series prediction?
I'll say Cavs in five, and I'll say that the Pacers will win game one or two in Cleveland.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Pacers or Cavs in five. I think the Cavs lose game three at the Bankers Fields. I think that's like a very, just a lot of place to play. I think it's just LeBron head to head played bad there a while back. I'm very, very intrigued to see how the series goes out and how the Cavs react. I think game one, as long as like there is something different, I feel like we're sort of not like necessarily something specific or something major, but I feel like there is an expectation that something is going to look different about the Cavs on Saturday. And I'm kind of intrigued to see if that ends up being true or if that's just something that I'm kind of just like, or if they're just actually like, there is a problem there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, we've also seen games where, you know, it looked like they, you know, were sort of ready to, you know, I look that Friday night game that they lost when the Hawks weren't playing anybody. It was clear that they, like, were sort of ready to, you know, sort of go on a run in the third quarter, and then Kevin Love missed two wide-open threes, and then, like, Tim Hardaway Jr. made, like, two shots that, like, rattled in and had no, made no sense for them to go in, and yet they did, and, you know, it was deflating to the Cavs. So what happens when they come out expecting to put their foot down and maybe they see some adversity? I'll find that interesting.
Yeah, we will have a bunch of coverage at For the Sword. You will have myself and David covering a bunch of games. I will be at game one. We'll both be at game two. David's going to go to Indy for game three, so that's going to be pretty exciting. And we'll be there all throughout the playoffs, giving you some on-site coverage, audio from the pressers, from everything else that you will see from the Cavs. I mean, even, and I'll just leave it on this note, I should have mentioned this the other day. David, and I think you'll be able to visualize this maybe better than our listeners will. But when you're at the queue, you're in the bottom. When it's the regular season, there's a media dining room that's sort of just like there, and then there's a small media room, and then there's the normal one down the hall. The playoff media room at the season finale is already fully set up. You have the massive amounts of tables and everything like that down there. And it just, you could just tell that they were like kind of adjusting for it and ready for it. And I think the Cavs in the same way are there too. And it's pretty exciting to actually get to this point after sort of a long, like, what was it for, like, a lot of other teams? This was a very fun regular season for the Cavs, and for people watching the Cavs and covering the team at times, it kind of just was, it was not.
Well, and there are times where they seem like they are working hard to not make it fun. So
yeah,
but you know, they won 50 games, and you know, I'm still riding high off of last June, so it is what it is.
Yeah, I think everyone's feeling that way. I mean, honestly, as well. I mean, you always see the championship gear, and I think people are hoping for that same sort of feeling. But David, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure we will have you back on here shortly about this game, perhaps after game two. But next up, Whitney Medworth from SB Nation is going to come and talk about this from the Pacers side of things and kind of get that side of things, because it's something maybe we need to actually get into. We need to see what the other team, how they're actually going to approach this series, and how guys like Paul George and Lance and TJ are going to pack this year. So take a short break. Whitney Medworth from SB Nation will be our guest.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, so now we're joined by Whitney Medworth. She's the assistant NBA editor at SB Nation. Whitney, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Cavs Pacers, you're a Pacers fan. From your perspective, as someone who follows the Pacers a lot closer than I have, on the surface, Paul George has been incredible for like 6 weeks now, making that push for All NBA. They've added Lance. They got into the playoffs after looking maybe the Heat were going to get in there. Where do you think the Pacers are at right now as we start the playoffs?
Yeah, I think they're in a good place. Had they been at this place, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, then probably a lot better. They may be getting it a little bit too late. And then, of course, you draw the Cavs in the first round, which, as much as I love a good LeBron James, Paul George series, that doesn't mean I want to play the Cavs in the first round. So I think they're in a good place. I do. I don't know that it's good enough to get much done at this point.
From your perspective, where do you think the Cavs are as compared to the Pacers? Like, it seems, I mean, as someone who's watching the Cavs every day, I think they're better off than I think some people would think, but I also don't think they're exactly, I don't think everything's like perfect right now.
Yeah, right. And I think that if it was a regular season game, say they were going to match up this Saturday just for a regular season matchup, I think the Pacers could probably hang with them. But as a Pacers fan knows very well, LeBron James is not human. And when he wants something, it's a little bit different story. So, I mean, the Cavs have, I mean, you can see their troubles on paper. It's quite clear. But at the same time, at least in the first round, I'm not nervous that they will get it together enough to handle the Pacers.
Yeah. Let's talk about Paul George. He's been, like, again, incredible. His numbers for the past 6 weeks, and as they were closing out the regular season, were just, I mean, insane. I mean, him and LeBron, to me, is the most interesting matchup in this year, just because we've seen a version of it before. I think would you say Paul's better now than he was when LeBron was in Miami?
Yeah, I think that this past stretch has definitely been Paul's best stretch of his career. I mean, I've never seen him shoot as well as he's shooting right now. He's always been a smooth player, but I've never seen him shoot the ball as well as he has been shooting. And he looks really, really confident. I think Paul's in a really good place. I hope that it's going to make for a good series. I'd love for it to go like six games or something, and we could see them battle it out, because I think it will be really interesting. And I think Paul's in a place that he hasn't been before, and he had a slow start to the season, so a lot of people began to write him off. And I think some of that slow start also had to deal with, and a lot of people probably forget this, he had a bad ankle injury for the first month, and he sat a lot, so that helped. That didn't help. And then, I mean, the team was so new, he was trying to get them involved and trying to make the team work, you know, as I think is what he thought he should do. And at some point this, you know, towards the end, he just started to take over. And I've said a couple times on Twitter that I didn't think I'd ever seen him shoot as confidently and as well as he is right now. And the numbers show that it's kind of true. They are his best numbers throughout his career.
Was this the type of Pacers team you're expecting at the beginning of the year, like how they've played in the lead up to the playoffs?
I think that we were afraid they were going to be a mismatched team that didn't quite fit together, and they could be good, but they could be kind of bad. And I think they've done that. they've kind of been that all year. What people were afraid of, they kind of were. But, you know, as odd as it has been, you know, the Lance returning home thing that has happened, somewhat seemed like a missing piece. And I don't want to say that like the Pacers are fixed now and they're a contender in the East and everything's better, but it does really seem like he has brought just kind of that last piece that slid in, and now things fit a lot better than they once did.
I'm very sure in this series we're going to see a Lance Stephenson, Richard Jefferson dust up. I'm very sure we're going to see it, because Richard's low-key sort of an angry, emotional player.
Like, yeah.
He gets technicals all the time. I'm very sure if Dante Jones is in the game at the same time as Lance,
oh my God,
those two
yeah.
guys are probably going to get into something. I'm actually really – I'm very excited about the Lance thing. I'm very intrigued to see how he's going to – like.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the first time he feels like he's been part of a team really yep. since he left. He was part of those Grizzlies teams last year, but he's not like, he wasn't like a grit and grind culture guy. This feels like home for him, and he's going against the guy where his most famous moment ever.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy too how it's all worked out, because, you know, brought him back home. His first game is, you know, against the Cavs. And I mean, you saw in that game, like, LeBron was yapping at him.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
we were kind of right back, to the Miami Heat days right off the bat. And LeBron took those two free throws. He missed both of them, but he was talking to Lance the entire time.
Yeah.
LeBron was shooting them. So it's like, we got right back in it. And now the first playoff series, I mean, I hope, even if it's like a 4-game sweep, I think it's going to be a really exciting 4-game series.
Yeah. What do you think Lance has, I mean, in terms of actual basketball, and how do you think he'll fit into McMillan's playoff rotation?
Well, first, Nate has kind of shortened his rotation, which helps a bit. But
yeah.
the thing that Lance does that, and I love Rodney Stuckey. He was great for the Pacers, especially in the year that Paul was hurt. Stuckey was huge. But Stuckey getting hurt and ultimately getting let go, which allowed Lance to come back, Lance creates a little bit better for everybody else than Stuckey did. Stuckey could create for himself, but Lance can create for others. And that's really what the second unit needed. So, you know, Nate moved Aaron Brooks over and kind of allows Lance to run the show now, which has gotten CJ Miles a lot of open looks, which is kind of my low-key favorite thing about Lance coming back to the Pacers, is that CJ Miles is getting some wide open shots now, that he wasn't getting before. So I think if Nate keeps it as he's had it the past 6 games, I think it's a good rotation. Part of that plays into it is Al Jefferson has been hurt, and I think it's almost been a blessing in disguise, because he hasn't been running some really big lineups of like Al Jefferson and LaVoy Allen at the same time, or Al Jefferson and Kevin Seraphin at the same time, which are just not good. Those aren't good lineups for us. So hopefully he keeps kind of going what he has had going the past 6 games, which is weird to base your playoffs off 6 games, but it seems to have worked somewhat.
Yeah, and I know there's data that suggests that, like, momentum at the end of the year doesn't always correlate to playoff success. It's like, I think Habersher was the thing where it's like the first 10 games are actually a better predictor than the last 10 games, but I think, like, it's a very interesting optic and just emotional field for these two teams, because Indiana comes in having had to play for their playoff life. The Cavs
right.
have been able to coast for, like, 2-3 I mean, they've been coasting forever, like,
right.
realistically.
right.
Like, the only game that they've tried, I feel like, in the past month was the Boston game, where they really stamped them out in the second quarter. I mean, you saw the
right.
Hawks games, you saw they didn't even bother playing against Toronto or Miami, really.
Right.
Like, Indiana comes in, and I kind of think that first half is going to be really interesting, because will the Cavs actually be ready to go from the get-go? Like, will they come out, be engaged with Paul George, ready for Lance's shenanigans, ready to chase C.J. Miles around screens? Like, is J.R. Smith, if he's guarding C.J. Miles, is he going to be willing to, like, and just focused enough to chase him around screens? Is Kyrie going to be working around around screens to stop Jeff Teague from getting in the paint? Is Tristan Thompson, who, I mean, looked energetic in his return, going to be ready for Miles Turner? Like, I think there's these little just energy questions that I think give Indiana a chance to kind of put the Cavs on their heels at least early.
Yeah, and I think as much as a Pacers fan at heart doesn't want to say it, it's probably a good first series for the Cavs in terms of their long-term goals, because nobody's going to bring a little bit of fire out of LeBron like, you know, Paul George and Lance will. So, you know, I think it might be a It could be a test early. I mean, who knows? We could watch this game on Saturday. It could be a blowout, and none of this has mattered. But I think there's a good possibility that it could be a series that maybe kind of wakes the Cavs back up and gets them headed in the right direction. Because nobody, I mean, the Paul George and Lance aren't scared of LeBron. They think they can beat him at any time. So whether that's ever been true or not is different. But in terms of the mentality, I mean, they definitely welcome the challenge.
I 100% agree with that. I think the Pacers, they like, especially Paul George, has that confidence in himself. It's the same reason I think the Heat would have been a good first round opponent for the Cavs, just because,
yeah,
like, Deion thinks he's the best player on the court, and
absolutely,
yeah, he always does. And there's the weirdness of the fact that it's Miami,
exactly.
Whiteside pushes guys. Like, I think the Cavs need that, and I think Paul's sort of perfect for it, because if he wakes if he pushes LeBron. And LeBron has to defend him in this series. Like, LeBron's going to play 42 minutes, 44 minutes,
right,
something like that. George is probably going to play the same. Like, they might almost match minutes, really. I mean, if the Cavs do this thing where Paul or LeBron comes in and he sits out at the end of the first quarter, and he'll come in the second and basically play most of the second besides a late break near halftime where he plays with a bench unit. Well, where do Paul's rotations sort of normally fall during the first half?
Yeah, they'll try to get Paul out at the end of the first, usually, if they can, so he doesn't, you know, get an extra foul or anything like that. So he'll try to get him out a little bit in the first, and then bring him back, I don't know, at the 8 or 9 minute mark in the second, depending. Sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little less. But hopefully, I hope that Nate matches Paul with LeBron, because I mean, unless Lance is in there, Lance can guard him to an extent, but for the most part, I mean, it's going to be that's the great thing about the Paul George LeBron James thing, is because even when two teams have the two best players, they don't always guard each other.
Mm-hmm.
But in this series they guard each other on both ends, which I think makes it so exciting. And that game a couple weeks ago, I hope we get some more of that, at least somewhat, because I think it has the potential to be a really exciting series.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people go as predicted as far as 7 games. Like, I've seen that. Like, the Cavs get out in 7. I have it a little bit lower than that, but I mean, I think it's going to be close. Like, I think it's probably maybe closer than the Pistons series for the Cavs last year, where Detroit was very physical, pushed them, but just
right.
The talent wasn't there. Like, they didn't have anybody
right.
that could actually defend LeBron or, like, go against
yep.
LeBron. Paul George is that. Like, Paul George is the definition of that.
Isn't there some stat, though, that, like, LeBron hasn't lost a first-round game since, like...
It's been over 4 years.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, as a Pacers fan, you have to be realistic.
Yeah.
Because LeBron is LeBron. But, you know, in terms of drawing a first-round series, it's going to be exciting for the Pacers. You know, I said this earlier, had they been as good as they are now when they should have been, which is probably 2 or 3 months ago, you probably find yourself in a better position and you don't have to play LeBron till round 2 or something. But they did not give themselves that opportunity.
Yeah. When George is off the floor, let's say he gets in foul trouble, who do they go besides Lance? Do they have anybody else that they can throw at LeBron?
My only thoughts are that maybe Glenn Robinson III, if he's healthy, he's a bigger guard that could maybe bang with him a little bit. And then CJ, I mean, CJ can try. CJ guards a lot of, I mean, the entire year that Paul George was not playing the four when the Pacers wanted him to, CJ Miles was doing that for him. So, you know, CJ Miles can bang a little bit too, but your first two options are going to be Paul George and Lance. And then I would say maybe Glenn Robinson, CJ Miles may come next.
Outside of Paul George and Lance, who for you is the X factor in this series if Indiana is going to take it to 6-7 or, you know, even pull an upset?
Yeah, I think there's a few things that need to happen. I don't know if it's just one. I would pick maybe two. Miles Turner is going to have to play well. He went through quite a slump in the second half of the season, but as the Pacers have kind of found their way again, he has too. So they're gonna need him to be a defensive guy and to be strong around the basket. And then anytime that CJ Miles is shooting well, the Pacers are a really good team. So I kind of count them as both of the X factor of things you need. Because once CJ gets going, it opens up things a lot for everybody. So those would be my two X factor picks.
Yeah, I think the JR and Korver and Shumpert versus the Lance, the CJ and the Monta is sort of like a really interesting cross matchups there, because like all those, I think like Korver's like the best shooter of that group, but like can CJ take him off the dribble? Can Monta take him off the dribble? Mm-hmm. Do you want Korver defending those guys necessarily? Like, do you want Korver defending Lance? And like, is JR focused enough to chase CJ Miles around screens and to stay in front of Monta if Monta has a game where he goes off? And how does Shumpert factor into that as well? Because Cavs fans, and like I'm sure you're aware of just like how much dumb stuff Shumpert does. He's gonna play right. About like 20 minutes. Lube likes him a lot defending point guards. I actually expect to see him defending Teague at some points, and I'm kind of intrigued to see if he is the point guard on the second units if they decide to go away from him or Deron Williams first. Before we get to your prediction, you look at the Cavs, what about you with all the issues they've had with the defense, the general effort, the injuries, what about the Cavs actually concern you if you were someone observing or rooting for the team?
I would say that let me think about how to say this. I would hope that they will be able to turn the switch on and it won't be too late. And I would hope that I don't think that LeBron's ability to flip the switch will go away, but I mean, maybe someday there will be that point. Considering how many finals he's been to and how taxing this has been on him, I do think teams that he's on kind of rely on him at the end of the day. And so I guess if I was a fan rooting for the Cavs, I would just hope that they haven't waited too long to turn it around, because the end of the season just wasn't great, and we give any team as good as the Cavs kind of the benefit of the doubt that they will turn it around. And my fear would be, is there going to be a day where they can't, and they get bit by a team because they haven't turned it on soon enough? You could get past the Pacers and not necessarily have, quote unquote, flipped the switch yet. And so in the next round or the next round, if you still haven't been able to turn it on, at some point you could get bit. And so that would be my concern.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, they've lost four in a row. That's their longest losing streak of the year. They had an awful March. I think they've like had closer a losing record since the All-Star break. It's not great, but at the same time, like, you're right. You give the team like this a benefit of the doubt. You give a team with LeBron James the benefit of the doubt. But when they do lose, and that's going to happen at some point, it's going to be something that we probably should have seen coming but just didn't. That's kind of how I think it'll happen. Like, they'll lose, if they lose to Toronto in the second round or like lose to the series, it'd be like, oh, like all this was actually a concern and we just didn't.
Right.
Like LeBron made us think something different.
Yep.
All right. So let's get your series prediction. I'm on the record of Cavs in five with Indiana winning game three. I think Paul's going to have like at least two games where he just like destroys the world. And I'm kind of very excited for that. How do you think this series plays out?
In hopes of getting just a couple more games, I'm going to say Cavs in six. Hoping that the Pacers can steal one on the road and get one at home as well, and then the Cavs will take care of business. It'll be their wake up call and it'll be game over from there. So I'm gonna say Cavs in six, just purely because I want to see six battles between Paul George and LeBron James.
Yeah, I think that's pretty likely too. I think like if the Pacers especially, I think it's totally possible they win game one. Like, if the Cavs come out really badly in the first half and it's, like, a 10-point deficit at halftime, like, that would be pretty interesting. And I kind of – that would be the most interesting wrinkle to this series, I think, if it just goes bad for Cleveland right away and it doesn't just become this LeBron show right away.
Part of me thinks that if they win game one, then it's a five-game series.
Yeah.
So, I think five or six is very realistic. I'm going to say six, but I think five or six. Yeah. I don't think it'll go seven, and I don't think they'll sweep.
Do you think the Cavs get out of the East?
Yeah, I do. I have as a Pacers fan, feel very tied to LeBron James, even though, you know, never really cheered for him. I feel very tied to him and know everything that he's able to do. And I don't know that I'll ever feel comfortable picking against him. And nobody else in the East really scares me enough. Boston's the number one seed, but they don't scare me in that way. I think they're good, but not good enough. And I mean, at the time that LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love get clicking again, I think they'll get out of the East.
Yeah.
Now what happens after that, I don't know, but
I would personally be a little bit surprised if they won won the finals, to be honest.
Yeah, but I've thought that about LeBron before, and I've learned I don't ever doubt him anymore. So yeah,
I thought that last year. Like I thought when it was 3-1, I was like, okay, like this is probably a wrap, and then look what happened.
And you know, that could be kind of like part of the thing we were talking about. After we've learned to never doubt LeBron a million times, and then last year was kind of like the peak never doubt LeBron, and so you know, maybe that is masking more of their issues than we want to admit, just because we feel like we have to trust them. But and I don't know how the finals would go, but I would be shocked if they didn't get out of the East.
Yeah, I think it will be shocking if and when that happens, but it's going to be fun. I'm very excited for the playoffs to actually be here. Like, it actually feels real again, because it's been kind of like hard to like evaluate things, because I feel like I can actually attach value and reason to like what I'm actually seeing the Cavs do,
weeks. The Cavs are a lot different than most teams, whereas, you know, the Cavs are waiting for the playoffs, where, you know, as a Pacers fan, you're trying to get there. So I'm sure that's a very different experience, kind of waiting for an entire season to get back to now.
Yeah, it's not super fun all the time. It's very like, it's just like, okay. Like,
yeah.
When Larry Sanders and Derek Williams are things like your fan base are freaking out about, like it says a lot.
Right.
when people are like angry that Derek Williams isn't playing 10 minutes in meaningless regular season games, like that's kind of like, that's how a very first world basketball fan problem. It's a good point. It's a better place to be, I guess.
The Pacers are not so much glad, but it'll be fun to have LeBron James in the playoffs again. Last year was weird. Getting bounced by the Raptors was an unfamiliar feeling, so we're we're in familiar territory now.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And just tell everyone, you're obviously at SB Nation NBA with the folks like Tim Cato and Zito and Preda and all those guys over there. Where can people find you on Twitter if they want to follow along with your Pacers tweets during the first round?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. It's at @its_Whitney. You can find me on SB Nation NBA. We'll be hanging out there through all the playoffs. Hope you guys will hang out with us, and hoping for a great series. And once again, it's at @its_Whitney.
Well, thank you again for coming on. This has been today's Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Thanks to Whitney and David Zavok, our first guests, for giving us the big picture preview for the first round. We'll be back late Saturday night, probably, depending on when that game ends, with a game one recap. So we'll talk to you then. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.